Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Elantris, Part 3. Created by Brandon Sanderson. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, David Coy, Tony Penny, Jason Stiles, Thomas Simpson, Tony Nam, Elizabeth Jernigan, Kate Foster, Mary McGowan, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Colleen Delaney, Susan Linsky, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, and Dylan Lynch. Elantris, Part 3.
Graodin was wrong about Sheor's men. A few of them came to him that night to cook their food, the light of consciousness shining weakly in their eyes. The rest, the majority of Sheor's followers, did not. They came to him for another reason. He watched several of them pull a large stone block on one of Merishe's sleds. Their minds were gone, their capacity for rational thought atrophied somehow by their extended submersion in bestial madness. While several had recovered, if only partially, the rest seemed beyond help. They never made the connection between fires and cooking. They had simply stood howling over the grain, outraged and confused by their inability to devour it. No, these men had not fallen into his trap. But they had come anyway, for Raodin had dethroned their god. He had entered Sheor's territory and had escaped unscathed. He had power over food. He could make it inedible for one, but succulent for another. His soldiers had repeatedly defeated Sheor's band. To their simple, degenerate minds, there was only one thing to do when faced by a god more powerful than their own. Convert. They came to him the morning after his attempt at restoring their intelligence. He had been walking the perimeter of New Elantris' short defensive wall, and seen them slinking down one of the city's main thoroughfares. He had raised the call, thinking they had finally decided to mount a coordinated attack. But Sheor's men had not come to fight. They had come to give him a gift. The head of their former god, or at least her hair. The lead madman had tossed the golden wig at Raodin's feet, its follicles stained with dark, stagnant Elantrian blood. Despite searching, his people never found Sheor's body. Then, the fleece of their fallen goddess lying in the slime before them, the wild men had bowed their faces to the ground in supplication. They now did exactly as Raodin said in all things. In turn, he had rewarded them with morsels of food, just as one would a favored pet. It disturbed him, using men like beasts. He made other efforts to restore their rational minds, but even after just 2 days, he knew that it was a futile hope. These men had surrendered their intellect, and regardless of whether psychology or the door was to blame, it would never return. They were remarkably well-behaved, docile even. The pain didn't seem to affect them, and they performed any duty, no matter how menial or laborious. If Raodin told them to push on a building until it fell over, he would return days later to find them still standing against the same wall, their palms pressed against the belligerent stone. Yet, despite their apparent obedience, Raodin didn't trust them. They had murdered Saolin. They had even killed their former master. They were calm only because their god currently demanded it.
Kayana, there's not much left, is there?
The Kayana was Galadon's name for them. It meant the insane.
You sent for Asul?
Yes, I did. Come with me.
Karate and Galadon followed Raodin into the chapel that he had made his base of operations. The increased manpower of the Kayana had given Mary Shay and his workers the means to reconstruct some stone furniture, thereby conserving their already dwindling wood resources. Raoden's new table inside the chapel was the same one that he had used to make Tayane remember his stone carving days. A large crack patched with mortar ran down the middle, but other than that, it was remarkably intact, the carvings worn but distinct. The table held several books. The recent restoration of New Elantris required Raoden's leadership, making it difficult for him to sneak away to the hidden library, so he had brought out several volumes. The people were accustomed to seeing him with books, and hadn't thought to question him, even though these tomes still had leather covers on them. He studied Aeon Dor with increasing urgency. The pain had grown. Sometimes it struck with such ferocity that Raoden collapsed, struggling against the agony. It was still manageable, if only barely, but it was growing worse. It had been a month and a half since he entered Elantris, and he doubted he would see another month come and go.
I don't see why you insist on sharing every Aeon Dor detail with the Su.
Raoden approached an open tome.
I barely understand half of what you tell us.
Galadon, you must force yourself to remember these things. No matter what you claim, I know you have the intellect for it.
Perhaps, but that doesn't mean I enjoy it. Aeon Dor is your hobby, not mine.
Listen, my friend. I know Aeon Dor holds the secret to our curse. In time with study, we can find the clues we need. But if something should happen to me, then there has to be someone to continue my work.
You're about as close to becoming a Hoeed as I am to being a Fjordel.
I hide it well. That doesn't matter. It is foolish not to have a backup. I'll write these things down, but I want you two to hear what I have to say.
All right, Sue. What have you discovered? Another modifier to increase the range of an Aeon?
No, this is far more interesting. I know why Elantris is covered with slime.
Karete and Galadon perked up.
Really?
Karete looked down at the open book.
Does it explain that here?
No, it's a combination of several things. The key element, however, is right here.
Raoden pointed to an illustration.
Aeon Aeshi?
Correct. Did you know that Elantrian skin was so silvery that some people claimed it glowed?
It did, not brightly. But when my father walked into a dark room, you could see his outline.
Well, the door was behind it. Every Elantrian's body is connected constantly to the door. The same link existed between Elantris itself and the door, though the scholars don't know why. The door infused the entire city, making stone and wood shine as if some quiet flame were burning within.
It must have been difficult to sleep.
You could cover it up, but the effect of the lighted city was so spectacular that many Elantrians just accepted it as natural, learning to sleep even with the glow.
Fascinating. So, what does this have to do with slime?
There are fungi and molds that live on light, Galadon. The door's illumination was different from regular light, however, and it attracted a different kind of fungus. Apparently, a thin translucent film grew on most things. The Elantrians didn't bother to clean it off. It was practically imperceptible, and it actually enhanced the radiance. The mold was tough, and it didn't make much mess until it died.
The light faded.
And the fungi rotted. Since the mold once covered the entire city, now the slime does as well.
So, what's the point?
This is another string in the web, another clue as to what happened when the Riode struck. We have to work backward, my friend. We are only now starting to learn symptoms of an event that happened 10 years ago. Maybe after we understand everything the Riode did, we can begin to guess what might have caused it.
The slime explanation makes sense, my prince. I've always known that there was something unnatural about that grime. I've stood outside in the rain, watching waves of water pound against a stone wall without cleaning it a speck.
The slime is oily and repels water. Have you heard Kayhair talk about how difficult it is to scrub away?
Karete nodded, leafing through the tome.
These books contain much information.
They do, though the scholars who wrote them could be frustratingly obscure. It takes a great deal of studying to find answers to specific questions.
Such as?
Well, for one thing, I haven't found a single book that mentions how to make Saeons.
None at all?
No. I always assumed that Saeons were created by Aeon Dor. But if so, the books don't explain how. A lot of them talk about the passing of famous Saeons from one person to another, but that's about it.
Passing?
Giving the Saeon to another person. If you have one, you can give it to someone else. Or you can tell it who it's supposed to go and serve if you should die.
So a regular person could have a say on? I thought it was only noblemen.
It's all up to the previous owner.
Though a nobleman's not likely to pass his say on to some random peasant. Seons, like wealth, tend to stay in the family. Golo?
So, what happens if the owner dies and hasn't told the Seon who to move on to?
Raoden paused, then shrugged, looking to Galadon.
Don't look at me, Sul. I never had a Seon.
I don't know. I guess it would just choose its next master on its own.
And if it didn't want to?
I don't think it would have a choice. There's something about Seons and their masters. They're bonded somehow. Seons go mad when their masters are taken by the Sheod, for instance. I think they were created to serve. It's part of their magic.
My lord, spirit!
Raoden raised an eyebrow, closing the tome.
My lord!
What is it, Daishin?
It's the Gion, my lord! He's been healed!
A month and a half, and you've already dethroned the king! Never let it be said that you don't work quickly, Ini.
Serini's father's words were jovial, though his glowing face betrayed concern. He knew, as she did, that chaos in the wake of an uprooted government could be dangerous for both peasant and noble.
Well, it isn't as if I intended it. Merciful Domai, I tried to save the fool. He shouldn't have gotten mixed up in the mysteries.
I should never have sent you over there. You were bad enough when we let you visit our enemies.
You didn't send me here, Father. This was my idea.
I'm glad to know that my opinion counts for so much in my daughter's eyes.
I'm sorry, Father. I've been on edge ever since. You don't know how horrible it was.
Oh, I do, unfortunately. How in Domai's name could a monstrosity like the Mysteries come from a religion as innocent as Yesker?
The same way Shudereth and Shukorath could both come from the teaching of one little Jindoese man.
So, Aedon is dead.
You've heard?
I sent a few new spies into Aerelan recently, Ini. I'm not going to leave my daughter alone in a country on the edge of destruction without at least keeping an eye on her.
Who?
You don't need to know.
They must have a seon. Otherwise you wouldn't know about Aedon. He only hanged himself last night.
I'm not going to tell you, Ini. Even if you knew who it was, you would inevitably decide to appropriate him for your own purposes.
Fine. But when this is all over, you better tell me who it was.
You don't know him.
Fine.
So, tell me about Aedon. How in Domai's name did he get a rope?
Lord Eondel must have arranged it. The Count thinks like a warrior, and this was a very efficient solution. We don't have to force an abdication, and suicide restored some dignity to the monarchy.
Bloodthirsty this afternoon, are we, Ini?
You didn't see it, Father. The king didn't just murder that girl. He enjoyed doing it.
Ah. My sources say Duke Telrai will probably take the throne.
Not if we can help it. Telrai is even worse than Aedon. Even if he weren't a Dorethi sympathizer, he'd make a terrible king.
Meanie, a civil war will help no one.
It won't come to that, Father. You don't understand how unmilitaristically minded these people are. They lived for centuries under Elantrian protection. They think the presence of a few overweight guards on the city wall is enough to dissuade invaders. Their only real troops belong to Lord Eondel's legion, which he's ordered to gather at Kaye. We might just be able to get Roile Crown before anyone's the wiser.
You've united behind him, then?
He's the only one rich enough to challenge Telrai. I didn't have enough time to stamp out Aedon's foolish monetary title system. That is what the people are accustomed to, and so we're going to have to use it. For now.
A maid entered Serini's room with a lunch tray. Serini had returned to live in the palace after spending only one night in Roile's manor, despite her ally's concerns. The palace was a symbol, and she hoped it would lend her authority. The maid put the tray on the table and departed.
Was that lunch?
Yes.
Serini cut herself a piece of cornbread.
Is it good?
You shouldn't ask, Father. You'll only upset yourself.
I know. Your mother has a new fascination. Thraggish weed soup.
Is it good?
Serini's mother was the daughter of a Teoish diplomat, and had spent most of her growing years in Jindo, As a result, she had picked up some very odd dietary preferences, ones she forced upon the entire palace and its staff.
Oh, it's horrible.
Pity. Now, where did I put that butter?
Oh.
Father, you know you need to lose weight.
While the king was nowhere as large, in either muscle or fat, as his brother Kaian, he was more portly than he was stocky.
I don't see why. Did you know that in Dunedain they consider fat people attractive? They don't care about Jindui's notions of health. They're perfectly happy. Besides, where has it been proven that butter makes you fat?
You know what the Jindo say, Father. If it burns, it isn't healthy.
Oh, I haven't had a cup of wine in 10 years.
I know, Father. I used to live with you, remember?
Yes, but she didn't make you stay away from alcohol.
I'm not overweight. Alcohol burns.
So does raggish weed soup. At least it does if you dry it out. I tried.
I doubt Mother responded very well to that little experiment.
She just gave me one of her looks. You know how she is.
Yes.
Serini recalled her mother's features. She had spent far too much time on diplomatic missions in the last few years to suffer from homesickness now, but it would be nice to be back in Teod, especially considering the seemingly endless series of surprises and disasters that had filled the last few weeks.
Well, Ini, I have to go hold court. I'm glad you occasionally take the time to call your poor old father, especially to let him know when you've overthrown an entire nation. Oh, one more thing. As soon as we found out about Aiden's suicide, Sinelane commandeered one of my fastest ships and set sail for Aralon. He should be arriving within a few days.
Sinelane? What part does the Patriarch have in all this?
I don't know. He wouldn't tell me. But I really have to go, Ini. I love you.
I love you too, Father.
I've never met the Patriarch.
Rawile sat in his seat in Kaian's dining room.
Is he much like Father Omine?
No. Sinelane is a self-serving egotist with enough pride to make a Dorethi Gion look humble.
Princess, you're talking about the father of our church.
That doesn't mean I have to like him.
Eondel's face whitened as he reached reflexively for the Aeon Omai pendant around his neck.
You don't have to ward off evil, Eondel. I'm not going to reject Domai just because he put a fool in charge of his church. Fools need to have a chance to serve, too.
Eondel's eyes turned down toward his hand. Then he lowered it with an embarrassed look.
Does my lord find something funny?
It's just that I was considering something, Serini. I don't think I've ever met anyone, male or female, that's quite as opinionated as you are.
Then you've lived a sheltered life, my duke. And where is Lukel, anyway?
Kaian's table wasn't as comfortable as Roile's study, but for some reason they all felt most at home in Kaian's dining room. While most people added personal touches to their study or reception room, Kaian's love was his food, and the dining room the place where he shared his talent. The room's decorations, mementos from Kaian's travels, including everything from dried vegetables to a large ornamental axe, were comfortingly familiar. There was never any discussion about it. They all just naturally came to this room when they met. They had to wait a few more moments before Lukel finally decided to return. When Lukel did finally return, Ahane and Kaian were with him.
Well, Lukel?
Tel Rai'i definitely intends to take the throne.
Not with my legion backing Roile, he won't.
Unfortunately, my dear general.
Ahane settled his bulk into a chair.
Your legion isn't here. You've barely a dozen men at your disposal.
It's more than Tel Rai'i has.
Not anymore, it isn't. The Elantra City Guard left their posts to set up camp outside Tel Rai'i's mansion.
The guard is hardly more than a club for second sons who want to pretend they're important.
True, but there are over 600 people in that club. At 50-1 odds, even I would fight your legion. I'm afraid the balance of power has shifted in Tel Rai'i's favor.
This is bad. Tel Rai'i's superior wealth was a great problem before, but now...
There's got to be a way.
I don't see one.
The men frowned, deep in thought. However, they had all been pondering this very problem for 2 days. Even if they'd had the military edge, the other aristocrats would be hesitant to support Roile, who was the less wealthy man. As Serini studied each lord in turn, her eyes fell on Shudin. He seemed hesitant rather than worried.
What?
I think I may have a way.
Speak on, man.
Serini is still very wealthy. Raoden left her at least 500,000 deos.
We discussed this, Shuden. She has a lot of money, but still less than Roael.
True. But together, they would have far more than Telrai.
Your marriage contract is technically void, my lady.
Aishi floated forward.
It dissolved as soon as Aedon killed himself, thereby removing his line from the throne. The moment someone else becomes king, be it Telrai or Roael, the treaty will end, and you will cease to be an Aerilish princess.
If you unify your fortune with that of Lord Roael, it would not only give you the money to stand against Telrai, it would also legitimize the Duke's claim. Don't assume that the lineage doesn't matter in Aerilon. The nobles would much rather give their loyalty to one of Aedon's relatives.
Roael found her with eyes like those of a benevolent grandfather.
I must admit that young Shuden has a point. The marriage would be strictly political, Serini.
Things happen so quickly.
I understand, my lord. We will do what must be done.
And so, for the second time in only 2 months, Serini was engaged to be married.
That wasn't very romantic, I'm afraid.
The meeting was over, and Roael had discreetly offered to escort Serini back to the palace. The others, including Aishi, had realized that the two needed to talk alone.
It's all right, my lord. That is how political marriages are supposed to be. Dry, contrived, but extremely useful.
You're very pragmatic.
I have to be, my lord.
Must we return to the my lord, Serini? I thought we were beyond that.
I'm sorry, Roael. It's just hard to separate my personal self from my political self.
I meant what I said, Serini. This will be strictly a union of convenience. Do not feel yourself obligated in any other way.
There will need to be heirs.
No, Serini. Thank you, but no. Even if such were physically possible, I couldn't go through with it. I'm an old man and can't possibly survive more than a few years. This time, your wedding contract won't forbid you from remarrying after I die. When I'm gone, you can finally choose a man of your own preference. By then, we will have replaced Iodan's silly system with something more stable, and your children, with the third husband, will inherit the throne.
Well, if things do happen as you suggest, then at least I wouldn't have trouble attracting a husband. The throne would be a tempting prize, even if I were attached to it.
This is something I've been meaning to discuss with you, Serini.
What?
You're far too harsh on yourself. I've heard the way you speak. You assume that nobody wants you.
They don't. Trust me.
You're an excellent judge of character, Serini. Except your own. Often, our own opinions of ourselves are the most unrealistic. You may see yourself as an old maid child, but you are young, and you are beautiful. Just because you've had misfortune in your past doesn't mean you have to give up on your future.
Roael looked into her eyes. For all his mischievous shows, this was a man of sagely understanding.
You will find someone to love you, Serini. You are a prize. A prize even greater than that throne you'll be attached to.
Serini blushed, looking down. Still, his words were encouraging. Perhaps she did have a hope. She would probably be in her mid-30s, but she would have at least one more chance to find the right man.
Anyway, our wedding will have to come soon if we are going to be Telrai.
What do you suggest?
The day of Aedon's funeral. Technically, Aedon's reign doesn't end until his burial.
4 days, a short engagement indeed.
I just worry at the necessity of putting you through all this. It can't be easy to consider marrying such a dusty old man.
Serini laid her hand on that of the Duke, smiling at the sweetness in his tone.
All things considered, my lord, I think I'm rather fortunate. There are very few men in this world I'd actually consider it an honor to be forced to marry.
Roael smiled a wrinkly smile, his eyes twinkling.
It's a shame Ahane's already married, isn't it?
Sereni removed her hand and swatted him on the shoulder.
I've had enough emotional shocks for 1 week, Roile. I'll kindly thank you not to make me sick to my stomach as well.
Sereni tensed at the sound, but the yells weren't ones of anger or pain. They seemed joyful and excited. Confused, she looked out the carriage window and saw a crowd of people surging through a cross street.
What in the name of Domai is that?
Their carriage drew closer, allowing Sereni to make out a tall form at the center of the crowd. Sereni grew numb.
But that's impossible!
What?
It's Wraithen! He's left Elantris!
Then she realized something else. The Giorn's face was unspotted, flesh-colored.
Merciful Domai, he's been healed!
When dawn signaled the fifth day of Wraithen's exile, he knew that he had made a mistake. He would die in Elantris. 5 days was too long to go without drink, and he knew there was no water to be had in the City of the Damned. He didn't regret his actions. He had behaved in the most logical way. It had been desperate logic, but rational nonetheless. Had he continued in Kaiyi, he would have grown more impotent with each turning day. No. It was much better to die of dehydration. He grew increasingly delirious as the fifth day passed. At times, he saw Dilaf laughing over him. At others, the Teoish princess did the same. Once, he even thought he saw Yareth himself, his face burning red with the heat of godly disappointment as he looked down on Wraithen. The delusions soon changed, however. He no longer saw faces, no longer felt humiliated and scorned. In their place, he was confronted with something much more horrid. Memories of Dakor. Once again, the dark, hollow cubicles of the monastery surrounded him. The cries of bestial agony mixed with solemn chanting. The chanting that had a strange power to it. The boy Wraithen knelt obediently, waiting, crouched in a cubicle no larger than a closet, sweat streaming past terrified eyes, knowing that eventually they would come for him. Rathbor Monastery trained assassins. Fjeldor Monastery trained spies. Dakor Monastery trained demons. His delirium broke sometime in the early afternoon, releasing him for a time, like a cat allowing its prey to run free one last time before striking a deadly blow. Wraithen roused his weakened body from the hard stones, his matted clothing sticking to the slimy surface. He didn't remember pulling into a fetal position. Wraithen rubbed a hand over his dirty, grime-stained scalp. His fingers scraped against something rough and gristly. Stubble. Wraithen sat upright, shock providing momentary strength. He reached with trembling fingers, searching out the small flask that had contained his sacrificial wine. He wiped the glass as best he could with a dirty sleeve, then peered at his spectral reflection. It was distorted and unclear, but it was enough. The spots were gone. His skin, though covered with dirt, was as fresh and unblemished as it had been 5 days before. Fortin's potion had finally worn off. He had begun to think that it never would, that Fortin had forgotten to make the effects temporary. Wraithen stood, gathering his remaining strength and bolstering it with excited adrenaline. He looked toward the guardhouse above.
Behold! Witness the power and glory of Lord Yadid! I have been healed!
There was no response. Where had the guards gone? They considered it their solemn duty to watch Elantris.
I am healed! Glory be to Yadid! Release me from this foul city!
Wraithen could feel the strength leak from his body. If the guard wasn't there to open the gates, then he was doomed. Had the gate really opened? Or was it another hallucination? But then, a head poked through the gap. The avaricious captain that Hraithen had been nurturing.
My lord?
Then he looked Hraithen up and down with wide eyes.
Oh, gracious Domai! It's true, you've been healed!
Lord Gadrik has heard my pleas, Captain. The taint of Elantris has been removed from my body.
The captain's head disappeared for a moment. Then, slowly, the gate opened all the way, revealing a group of wary guards.
Come, my lord.
Hraithen walked on shaky legs to the gate. He turned, resting his hand on the wood, one side filthy and grime-stained, the other side bright and clean, and looked back at Elantris. A few huddled shapes watched him from the top of a building.
Enjoy your damnation, my friends.
Hraithen motioned for the guards to shut the gate.
I really shouldn't be doing this, you know. Once a man is thrown into Elantris...
Yeldit rewards those who obey him, Captain. Often at the hands of his servants.
The captain's eyes brightened, and Hraithen was suddenly very grateful he had begun bribing the man.
Where are the rest of your men, Captain?
Protecting the new king.
New king?
You've missed a lot, my lord. Lord Telrai rules in Aerilon now. Or at least he will as soon as Aiden's funeral is over.
Weakened as he was, Hraithen could only stand in shock. Iadon dead? Telrai seizing control? How could 5 days bring about such drastic events?
Come, you can explain it to me on the way to the chapel.
The crowds gathered around him as he walked. The captain owned no carriage, and Hraithen didn't want to bother waiting for one. For the moment, the exhilaration of a plan fulfilled was enough to keep him moving. The crowds helped as well. As news spread, the people, servants, merchants, and nobles alike, came to stare at the recovered Elantrian. All parted before him, regarding him with looks that ranged from stunned to worshipful, some reaching out to touch his Elantrian robe in awe. In that moment, Hraithen felt a sense of fulfillment that rivaled the day he had become a full Giorn. His healing wasn't just unexpected. It was unfathomable. There was no way Serini could have planned for it. For once, Hraithen had total and complete advantage. When he reached the chapel, Hraithen turned to the mass of people with raised hands.
People of Aerilon, know ye this day who is master. Let your hearts and souls be guided by the religion which can offer evidence of divine support. Lord Yadith is the only god in Sikla. If you need proof of this, look at my hands that are clean from rot, my face that is pure and unblemished, and my scalp rough with stubble. Lord Yadith tested me, and as I relied on him, he blessed me. I have been healed!
Many of the crowd had probably doubted after Hraithen's apparent fall, but they would return with renewed dedication. The converts he made now would be stronger than any that had come before. Hraithen entered the chapel, and the people remained outside. Hraithen walked with increasing fatigue, the energy of the moment finally giving way to 5 days' worth of strain. He flopped to his knees before the altar, bowing his head in sincere prayer. It didn't bother him that the miracle was an effect of Fortin's potion. Hraithen had found that most supposed miracles were either natural or the result of human intervention. Yadeth was behind them, as he was behind all things, using natural phenomena to increase the faith of man. Hraithen raised praises to God for giving him the capacity to think of the plan, the means to execute it, and the climate to make it succeed. The captain's arrival had certainly been a result of divine will. That the man would leave Telrai's camp just when Hraithen needed him, and that he would hear Hraithen yelling through the thick wood, was simply too much to be a coincidence. Yadeth might not have cursed Hraithen with the Sheyod, but he had certainly been behind the plan's success. Drained, Hraithen lurched to his feet. When he turned, Diloth stood behind him. This was a confrontation he had hoped to avoid until he'd had some rest. Diloth, however, fell to his knees before Hraithen.
My Rodin,
Wraithen blinked in surprise.
Yes, Ardith?
I doubted you, my Hroden. I thought Lord Yadeth had cursed you for incompetence. Now I see that your faith is much stronger than I realized. I know why you were chosen to hold the position of Giorn.
Your apology is accepted, Ardith. All men quested in times of trial. The days following my exile must have been difficult for you and the other priests.
We should have had more faith.
Learn from these events, then, Ardith. And next time, do not allow yourself to doubt. You may go.
Diloth moved to leave. As the man rose, Wraithen studied his eyes. There was respect there, but not as much penitence as the Arteth was trying to show. He looked more confused than anything. He was amazed and unsettled, but he was not pleased. The battle was not over yet. Too tired to worry about Diloth for the moment, Wraithen stumbled back to his quarters. His possessions were piled in one corner of the room, as if waiting to be hauled away for disposal. Suddenly apprehensive, Wraithen rushed to the pile. He found the Seon trunk beneath a pile of clothing. Its lock was broken. Wraithen opened the lid with anxious fingers and pulled out the steel box inside. The front of the box was covered with scrapes, scratches, and dents. Hurriedly, Wraithen opened the box. Several of the levers were bent and the dial stuck, so he was extremely relieved when he heard the lock click open. He lifted the lid with anxious hands. The Seon floated inside, unperturbed. The three remaining vials of potion lay next to it. Two had cracked, leaking their contents in the bottom of the box.
Did anyone open this box since I last spoke through you?
No, my lord.
Good.
Wraithen snapped the lid closed. After that, he drank a careful amount of wine from a flask he got from the pile, then collapsed on the bed and fell asleep. It was dark when he awoke. His body was still tired, but he forced himself to rise. A vital piece of his plans could not wait. He summoned a particular priest who arrived a short time later. The priest, Dothgen, was a tall man with a powerful Fjordal build and muscles that even managed to bulge through his red Dorethi robes.
Yes, my lord.
You were trained in the Wrathbor Monastery, were you not, Arteth?
I was, my lord.
Good. I have need of your special skills.
Like every graduate of Wrathbor, Dothgen was a trained assassin. He had received far more specialized training than Wraithen had at Gajan Monastery. The place Wraithen had gone after Dakor proved too much for him. Only a Giorn or a Ragnaut, however, could make use of a Wrathbor-trained priest without Wern's permission. Wraithen smiled. It struck while Raoden was studying. All he felt was the pain, sharp torment that dropped upon him suddenly and vengefully. It was like a million tiny insects, each one latching onto his body inside and out to eat him alive. Soon, he felt as if he had no body. The pain was his body. It pressed demandingly, pounding the pain into every nerve in his body. It was vast. It made men, mountains, and worlds seem paltry. It was not evil or even sentient. It didn't rage or churn. It was immobile, frozen by its own intense pressure. It wanted to move, to go anywhere, to find any release from the strain. But there was no outlet.
Dormakin, Raoden, can you hear?
Raoden's view sharpened. Karate's usually stern features were concerned, while Galadon was livid.
I'm all right.
The two helped him sit. His entire body was sore, as if he had tried to lift a dozen different weights at the same time.
Sul, what happened?
It was the pain. It was too much for me for a moment. I'm all right now and retreated.
What are you talking about, Sul?
Pain. The pain of my cuts and bruises, the pain of life here in Elantris.
Sul, the pain doesn't come in waves. It just remains the same.
It comes in waves for me.
That can't be, Golo. When you fall to the pain, you snap and your mind is gone. That's the way it always is. Besides, there's no way you could have accumulated enough cuts and bruises to go Hoeed yet.
You've said that before, Galadon, but this is how it works for me. It comes all of a sudden, as if trying to destroy me, then moves away. Maybe I'm just worse at dealing with it than everyone else.
My prince, you were glowing.
What?
It's true, Sul. After you collapsed, you began glowing, like an aeon. Almost as if...
As if the door were trying to come through me. Why me?
Some people are closer to the door than others, Sul. In Elantris, some people could create aeons, much more powerful than others, and some seemed more... intimate with the power.
Besides, my prince, are you not the one who knows the aeons best? We see you practicing them every day.
Raoden nodded slowly, almost forgetting about his agony.
During the Riod, they say the most powerful Elantrans were the first to fall. They didn't fight when the mobs burned them, as if they were overwhelmed by something.
Sudden and ironic relief soothed Raoden's mind. As much as the pain hurt, his insecurity had worried him more. Still, he was not free.
The attacks are getting worse. If they continue, they will take me. Eventually. If that happens...
You will join the Hoeed.
The door will destroy me, ripping my soul apart in a futile attempt to break free. It isn't alive, it's just a force. And the fact that I am not a viable passage won't stop it from trying. When it does take me, remember your vow.
Galadon and Karate nodded. They would take him to the pool in the mountains. Knowing they would take care of him if he did fall was enough to keep him going, and enough to make him wish just a little that the day of his failure was not far away.
That doesn't have to happen, though, Sul. I mean, that Gion was healed. Maybe something's happening. Maybe something has changed.
If he really was healed.
What do you mean?
There was a lot of fuss pulling him from the city. If I were Wern, I wouldn't want a Dorethi Elantrian hanging around to bring shame on my religion. I'd send an envoy to pull him out, telling everyone he'd been healed, then hide him back in Fjordal.
We never did get a good look at the man after he was healed.
Galadon looked a little crestfallen at the line of conversation. He, like others in Elantris, had received a measure of hope from Hraithin's healing. Raoden hadn't said anything outright to discourage the people's optimism, but inside, he was more reserved. Since the Giorn's departure, nobody else had been healed. It was a hopeful sign, but somehow, Raoden doubted it would mean much of a change for the Elantrian people. They needed to work and improve their own lives, not wait for some external miracle. He turned back to his studies. Serini watched the Giorn with displeased eyes. Hraithin no longer gave his sermons at the Dorethi Chapel. There were too many people. Instead, he organized meetings on the edge of the city, where he could stand on Kayi's 5-foot border wall, his followers sitting at his feet to listen. The Giorn preached with more vibrancy and enthusiasm than he had before. For now, he was a saint. He had suffered the Sheod and had proven himself superior to its curse. He was, Serini had to admit, an impressive opponent. Outfitted in his red armor, he stood like a bloodied metal statue above the crowd.
It must have been some kind of trick.
Of course it was, cousin. If we thought otherwise, we might as well join Shudarith. Personally, I look horrible in red.
Your face is too pink, Lukel.
If it was a trick, Serini, then I am at a loss to explain it.
Serini, Lukel, and Shuden stood at the periphery of the morning meeting. They had come to see for themselves the amazing numbers Hraithin's meetings drew, even on the very day of the king's funeral.
It could have been makeup.
That survived the ritual washing?
Maybe the priests were in on it.
Have you ever tried to bribe a Korathi priest, Lukel?
I'd rather not answer that question, thank you.
You sound almost as if you believe his miracle, Shuden.
I do not discount it. Why wouldn't God bless one of his devout? Religious exclusivism is a Karathi and Dorethi addition to Shukaseg.
Huh.
Serini nodded for her friends to follow as she pushed her way through the outlying crowds and walked toward their waiting carriage. Trick or not, Prathan had an uncomfortably strong hold on the people. If he managed to place a sympathizer on the throne, it would all be over. Aerilon would become a Dorethi nation, and only Teod would remain, though probably not for long. Her companions were undoubtedly thinking along similar lines. Both Lukel and Shuden's faces bore disturbed, contemplative looks. They entered the coach in silent thought, but finally, Lukel turned to her, his hawkish features troubled.
What do you mean my face is too pink?
The ship's mast bore the royal crest of Teod, a gold Aeon Teo on a blue background. Long and thin, there was no faster vessel on the water than a Teoish straight boat. Serene felt it her duty to give the Patriarch a better reception than she herself had received upon arriving at those same docks. She didn't like the man, but that was no excuse for incivility, and so she had brought Shuden, Lukel, Eondel, and several of the Count's soldiers as an honor guard. The thin ship came into dock smoothly, sailors throwing out a gangplank as soon as the vessel was secured. A blue-robed form strode past the sailors and down the gangplank with a firm step. Over a dozen attendants and lesser priests followed. The Patriarch liked to be well cared for. As Sinelane approached, Serene masked her face with controlled courtesy. The Patriarch was a tall man with delicate features. His golden hair was long, like that of a woman. It blended with the enormous gold cape that fluttered behind him. The blue robe was embroidered with so much gold thread, it was difficult at times to see the material underneath. He smiled with the benevolently tolerant face of one who wanted you to know he was patient with your inferiority.
Your Highness, it has been too long since my old eyes beheld your sweet features.
Serene did her best to smile, curtsying before the Patriarch and his old eyes. Sinelane was no more than 40, though he tried to make himself seem more aged and wise than he really was.
Your Holiness, all of Aerilan is blessed by your presence.
Sinelane nodded, as if to say that he understood just how fortunate they all were. He turned toward Shuden and the others.
Who are your companions?
My cousin Lukel and Baron Shuden and Count Eondel of Aerilon. Your Holiness.
Each man bowed as she made the introductions.
Only barons and counts?
Duke Roile sends his greetings, Your Grace. He is busy preparing for King Iadon's burial.
Ah.
Sinelane's luxurious hair, untouched by gray, waved in the sea wind. Serene had wished many times to have locks half as fine as those of the Patriarch.
I assume I am not too late to attend the funeral?
No, Your Holiness. It will occur this afternoon.
Good. Come, you may show me to my lodgings now.
That was disappointing.
Lukel and the rest of the group were climbing back into their carriage. The Patriarch had been given his own vehicle, courtesy of Roile, and the gift had cooled his dissatisfaction at the Duke's absence.
He's not exactly what you expect, is he?
That isn't what Lukel meant, Serene.
What do you mean, Lukel?
I was just hoping for something more entertaining.
He's been looking forward to this ever since he heard you describe the Patriarch, Your Highness. He assumed you would argue more.
Just because I don't like the man doesn't mean I'm going to make a scene, cousin. Remember, I was one of my father's chief diplomats.
I will admit, Serene, your analysis of the Patriarch's personality seems accurate. I am left wondering how such a man could be chosen for such an important position.
By mistake. Sinelane gained the seat about 15 years ago when he was barely your age. It was just after that Wulfdan became Wern, and the leaders of Shu Korath felt threatened by his vigor. For some reason, they got it into their minds that they needed to elect a Patriarch who was just as young as Wulfdan, if not younger. Sinelane was the result.
Shuden raised an eyebrow.
I agree completely. But I have to give them a bit of credit. Wulfdan is said to be one of the most handsome men ever to take the Fjordel throne, and the Karathi leaders wanted someone who would be equally impressive.
Handsome and pretty are two completely different things, cousin. Half the women who see that man will love him, the other half will just be jealous.
Throughout the conversation, Lord Eondel grew progressively more pale. Finally, he found voice for his indignation.
Remember, my lords and ladies, this is Domai's holy chosen vessel.
And he couldn't have picked a vessel more lovely.
Serini elbowed her cousin sharply in the ribs.
We will try to make our comments more respectful, Eondel. The Patriarch's looks are unimportant anyway. I'm more interested in why he came.
Isn't a king's funeral enough of a reason?
Perhaps.
The carriage pulled to a halt outside the Karathi Chapel.
Come on, let's see His Holiness settled as soon as possible. The funeral is in less than 2 hours, and after that, it appears that I'm getting married.
With no obvious heir, and with Ishane completely unhinged by her husband's disgrace and subsequent death, Duke Roile took the burden of the funeral arrangements upon himself.
Pagan murderer or not, Aedon was once my friend. He brought stability to this country in a time of need. For that much, he at least deserves a decent burial.
Omine had requested that they not use the Karathi Chapel for the services, so Roile decided to use the king's throne room instead. The choice made Serini a little uncomfortable. The throne room was the same place they would hold the wedding. However, Roile thought it symbolic that the same room would serve both the passing of the old king and the ascension of the new. The decorations were tasteful and subdued. Roile, characteristically frugal, had planned arrangements and colors that would work for both a funeral and a wedding. The room's pillars were wrapped with white ribbons, and there were various arrangements of flowers, mostly white roses or abertines. Serini entered the room, looking to the side with a smile. Near the front, next to one of the pillars, was the place where she had first set up her easel. It seemed like so long ago, though barely more than a month had passed. Forgotten with shame were the days when she had been considered an empty-headed girl. The nobility now regarded her with something akin to awe. Here was the woman who had manipulated the king, then made a fool of him, and finally toppled him from his throne. They would never love her as they had loved Raoden, but she would accept their admiration as an inferior substitute. To the side, Serini saw Duke Telrai. The bald, overdressed man actually looked displeased rather than simply uncaring. Roile had announced his wedding to Serini only a few hours earlier, giving the pompous Telrai little time to consider a response. Serini met Telrai's eyes and sensed frustration in the man's bearing. She had expected something from him, some kind of attempt to block their marriage, but he had made no move.
What holds him back?
Roile's arrival called the group to order, and the crowd fell silent. Roile walked to the front of the room where the king's casket lay sealed.
Many things can be said about King Aedon. Some good, some bad. But no matter what you may think of the man, we must never forget that Aedon forged a country from the ashes of Elantris. From nothing, he created something which we have all learned to, if not love, then respect. He gave us all our titles and gave us our lordship. In this sad time, we must be prudent. We must work hard not to forget the lessons that King Aedon taught us. We must never forget our Lord Domai in our riches and comfort. If we band together now, we can create a country stronger and better than before. I leave you with this thought. It is not our place to speak ill of the deceased, for Domai will see to Aedon's soul. And no one else. Thank you.
With that, Roile motioned for several of Eondel's soldiers to pick up the casket. However, another form stepped forward before they could go more than a few steps.
I have something to add.
Roile paused in surprise. Sinelane smiled, showing perfect teeth to the room. He had already changed clothing and was wearing a robe similar to the first, except it had a wide golden band running up his back and down his chest instead of the embroidery.
Of course, Your Holiness.
Sinelane walked up to stand behind the casket. He regarded the crowd with a self-important smile, melodramatically whipping a scroll from the sleeve of his robe.
10 years ago, just after his ascension, King Iaden came to me and made this statement. You can see his seal at the bottom, as well as my own. He ordered that I present this to Aerilon at his funeral, or 15 years from the date of its creation, whichever arrived first.
Rawile moved across the side of the room until he was standing next to Serini and Shuden. His eyes showed curiosity and concern. At the front of the room, Simelane broke the seal on the scroll and unrolled it.
My lords and ladies of Aerilon, let the will of your first king, Iaden of Kei, be known. I swear solemnly before Domai, my ancestors, and whatever other gods may be watching, that this proclamation is lawful. If it be that I am dead, or for some other reason unable to continue as your king, then let it be understood that I made this decree of sound mind, and it is binding according to the laws of our nation. I order that all titles of noble rank are to be frozen as they stand, to be handed down from generation to generation, father to son, as is commonly done in other nations. Let wealth no longer be the measure of a man's nobility. Those who have held to their rank this long have proven themselves worthy. The attached document is a codified list of inheritance laws, patterned after those in Teod. Let this document become the law of our country.
Simelane lowered the paper to a stunned room.
So that's what he was planning all along. He knew how unstable his system was. He intended it that way. He then let them go at each other's throats just to see who would be strong enough or treacherous enough to survive.
A good plan, if an unconscionable one. Perhaps we underestimated Iaedon's craftiness.
Simelane stood at the front of the room, eyeing the nobles with knowing looks.
Why him?
Because he's absolute. Not even Wraithen would dare question the word of the Patriarch. Not yet, at least. If Simelane says that order was made 10 years ago, then everyone in Aerilon is bound to agree with him.
Does this change our plans?
Not at all.
Rawile shot a look towards Tel'Rai, whose expression had turned even darker than before.
It strengthens our claim. My union with Iaedon's house will be even more creditable.
Tel'Rai still bothers me. His claim is definitely weakened by this. But will he accept it?
He'll have to. None of the nobility would dare follow him now. Iaedon's proclamation grants the thing they have all been wanting. Stable titles. The nobility aren't going to risk crowning a man who has no valid blood claim to the throne. The legality of Iaedon's declaration doesn't matter. Everyone is going to act as if it were church doctrine.
Eondel's soldiers were finally allowed to come forward and pick up the casket. Faced with no precedent regarding the proper burial of an Aerilish king, Rawile had turned to the culture most similar to his own, Teod. The Teos favored large ceremonies, often burying their greatest kings with an entire shipload of riches, if not the ship itself. While such was obviously unfit for Iaedon, Rawile had adopted other ideas. A Teoish funeral procession was a long, drawn-out exercise, often requiring the attendants to walk an hour or more to reach the prepared site. Rawile had included this tradition, with a slight modification. A line of carriages waited outside the palace. To Serini, using vehicles seemed disrespectful, but Shuden made a good point.
Rawile is planning to make a bid for the crown this very afternoon. He can't afford to offend the plush lords and ladies of Aerilon by requiring a forced march all the way out of the city.
With the carriages, it took only about 15 minutes to reach the burial site. At first, it looked like a large hole that had been excavated, but careful inspection would have shown it to be a natural depression in the earth that had been further deepened. Once again, Roile's frugality had been behind the choice. The ceremony was over in short order.
Lower the coffin.
The coffin was quickly lowered into the ground, and a large group of workers began to build the mound over it. Serini was surprised how many nobles stayed to watch. The weather had turned cold lately, bringing a chill wind from the mountains. A drizzle hung in the air, clouds obscuring the sun. She had expected most of the nobility to trickle away after the first few shovels of dirt were thrown. But they stayed, watching the work with silent eyes. Serini, dressed for once in black, pulled her shawl close to ward off the cold. Aedon had been the first king of Aerilon, his rule, short though it had been, the beginning of a tradition. People would recall Aedon's name for centuries, and children would be taught how he had risen to power in a land whose gods were dead. Was it any wonder he had turned to the mysteries? With all he had seen, the glory of pre-Rio Delantris, then the death of an era thought eternal, was it any wonder he sought to control the chaos that seemed to reign in the land of the gods? Serini thought she understood Aedon a little better, standing in the chill dampness, watching the dirt slowly envelop his coffin. Only when the last shovel of dirt was thrown, the last part of the mound patted down, did the Aerilish nobility finally turn to leave. Their going was a quiet procession, and Serini barely noticed. She stood for a while longer, looking at the king's barrow. Aedon was gone. It was time for new leadership in Aerilon. A hand fell lightly on her shoulder, and she turned to look into Roile's comforting eyes.
We should get ready, Serini.
Serini knelt before the altar in the familiar low-ceilinged Karathi chapel. She was alone. It was customary for a bride to have one last private communion with Domai before taking her marriage vows. She was draped head to foot in white. She wore the dress that she had brought for her first wedding, a chaste, high-necked gown that her father had chosen, and her face was swathed in a thick veil, which, by tradition, wouldn't be lifted until she entered the hallway where her fiancé waited. She wasn't certain what to pray about. Serini considered herself religious, though she was nowhere near as devout as Eondel. Her fight for Teod was really a fight for the Karathi religion. She believed in Domai and regarded him with reverence. She was faithful to the tenets the priests taught her, even if she was perhaps a little too headstrong. Now it appeared that Domai had finally answered her prayers. He had delivered her a husband, though he was not at all what she had expected. Perhaps, she thought to herself, I should have been a little more specific. There was no bitterness in the thought, however. She had known most of her life that she was meant for a marriage of policy, not of love. Roile really was one of the most decent men she had ever met, even if he was old enough to be her father, or even her grandfather. Still, she had heard of state marriages far more unbalanced. Several Jinduese kings were known to have taken brides as young as 12 years old.
Thank you, Domai.
She recognized a blessing when she saw one. With Roile as her husband, she would be queen of Aerilon. And if Domai did decide to take Roile from her in a few years, she knew the Duke's promise was true. She would have another opportunity.
Please, just let us be happy.
Her lady attendants waited outside, most of them daughters of nobility. Kaeis was there, looking very solemn in her little white dress, as was Tirine. They held Serini's long, cloak-like train as she walked the short distance to her carriage, then again as she alighted and entered the palace. The throne room doors were open, and Roile stood in a white suit near the front of the room. It was his intention to sit in the throne as soon as the ceremony was finished. If the Duke did not make his claim in a forceful, unquestionable manner, then Telrai might still try to seize control. The diminutive Father Omine stood beside the throne, clutching the large tome of the Do Korath. There was a dreamy look on his face. The little priest obviously enjoyed weddings. Zynaelain stood beside him, petulant that Serini hadn't asked him to officiate. She didn't really care. Living in Teod, she had always assumed that the patriarch would wed her. Now that she had an opportunity to use a priest she actually liked, she wasn't going to give in. She stepped into the room, and all eyes turned toward her. There were as many people at the wedding as there had been at the funeral, if not more. Aedon's funeral had been an important political event, but Roile's marriage was even more vital. the nobility would see it as paramount that they begin Roile's reign with a proper level of sycophantic flattery. Even the Giorn Hraithen was there. It was odd, Serini thought, that his face appeared so calm. Her wedding to Roile was going to be a major obstacle to his conversion plans. For the moment, however, Serini put the Fjordelt priest out of her mind. She had been waiting for this day for a long time, and even if it wasn't what she had once hoped for, she would make the best of it. It was finally happening. After all the waiting, after two near misses, she was actually going to get married. With that thought, both terrifying and vindicating, she raised her veil. Serini reached to pull off her veil, thinking perhaps there was something wrong with it. When it came off, her hair went with it. Serini stared down at the long tresses with stupefaction. Her hands began to shake. She looked up.
Domai has cursed this union!
Oh, my dear princess.
Even Omine clutched his Karathi pendant with shock. Serini turned frantically, her eyes finding one of the broad mirrors on either side of the throne room. The face that stared back was not her own. It was a repulsive thing, covered with black spots, defects that stood out even more markedly against her white dress. Only a few fugitive strands of hair still clung to her diseased scalp. Inexplicable and mysterious, the Sheol had come upon her.